Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government magazine, a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, exploring pressing public management issues facing us today. I'm Michael Keegan, your host. As with each edition, this issue of the Business of Government magazine, as is its focus, the core mission of the IBM Center for the Business of Government, connecting research to practice as a means to improve public management. In an era of fiscal contraction, today's government leaders face unique challenges that present many difficult choices. It is a period that, while imposing many constraints, simultaneously confers as many opportunities. These are the opportunities to make a difference, introduce new ways of managing, explore pragmatic approaches, and pursue management imperatives that help government leaders perform in an ever-challenging and complex environment. We hope that each feature contributes in some way to advancing best practices, clarifying core public management issues, and whenever possible, presenting strategies marked by clarity and practical utility. First up, Conversation with Leaders, featuring government leaders who are changing the way government does business. From transforming the national aerospace system to managing homeland security resources, educating today's information leaders, and transforming government operations, these executives clarify and extend our understanding of the work they champion and the efforts they lead. The nation stands on the verge of a new era in aviation. The national aerospace system is one of the largest and safest in the world. It is also one of the busiest.
We never take our eye off of safety, so safety is our utmost challenge. You know, we have clearly one of the challenges moving forward. We're seeing traffic grow again. We have to find ways to expand the capacity of this national air traffic system that we have. And in order to do that, we're going to have to implement a next-gen technology shift. We're going to shift from a radar-based, literally Eisenhower-era type of navigation system to the navigation system of tomorrow. The airplanes will be equipped for it. We need to have personnel that are qualified to operate in that system, along with the technology. And it's very, the satellite-based is quite a change for us. But it'll bring us wonderful benefits. People say, well, it's going to cost some money to make this shift.
Randy Babbitt, administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration, outlines the Next Generation Air Transportation System, or NextGen, explaining how it will improve the airspace system, increase capacity, and ensure safety.
Well, the next gen, if we take the really top view and start with that, we're going to transform our national airspace system from a radar-based, analog, ground-based signals for navigation into a satellite-based navigation system. And remember, we're talking about 24 million square miles of airspace. 15% of the world's traffic is in our airspace. And so this transformation is going to take, over time, almost 10 years, it's going to take us to fully implement. But at the end of it, we're going to have a safer system. We're going to have a more efficient system. Our capacity will be enhanced both in the air and on the ground. From a situational awareness perspective, the pilot now sees everything that the air traffic controller sees, along with a lot of other information.
In 2010, more than 700 million passengers flew on U.S. air carriers. With air traffic expected to increase by 50% in 15 years, and flight delays already causing disruptions in service and a loss of productivity, a revamped system is needed to accommodate future growth. A system that will let passengers fly safely with fewer delays and less congestion while reducing aviation's environmental impact. Babbitt outlined some of the key benefits of the next generation system.
If we follow the flight from leaving the gate, we have better ground management now with surveillance radar available to us. Surface detection equipment on the airport allows us to better control our ground traffic. We get in the air, we are going to use more optimized profiles to take us to our destination. Instead of driving like you would on a street, making all the turns and going over these traditional navigation points, there's no reason why everyone just can't go direct at the optimum altitude. And we have a very sophisticated computer technology that will separate the traffic for us with minor corrections. The other thing that we get is the ability to use tailored arrivals, or what we call optimized profile descents. The analogy that I make, it's the difference between walking down the steps and crossing the landings and sliding down the banister.
Safety is at the core of FAA's mission, and its commitment at pushing the bar higher in developing new safety strategies is obvious.
Well, I think safety is one of those areas where you never stop. I mean, you just have to keep trying to raise the bar at all times, and that's one of the things that we work toward. I mean, complacency is no place in aviation. This is a business where, you know, one accident is one too many.
With an expansive and varied mission, the U.S. Department of Homeland Security must manage its resources efficiently, effectively, and as one DHS. Rafael Boris, Undersecretary for Management, discusses how the department is turning its one DHS vision into reality and forging stewardship between meeting objectives and investing wisely.
Probably the simplest way to describe it is the Undersecretary for Management is the Chief Management Officer for the agency. But I really think about my job as being sort of the number one steward for good government. Really, that's what I see my job is, to constantly talk about good business practices, good return on investment. Now, somebody's going to say, what investments in the federal government? Well, we make investments in people. We make investments in goods and services that we acquire. So it's my job to make sure that we're good stewards of those investments, of the taxpayers' money. So I'm always talking about good government. I think that's my job.
Boris acknowledges that many challenges he faces also bring with them opportunities.
You know, I identified essentially three major areas of attention. I think it's very important coming into an organization to provide some context, a framework for what you're going to be focused on. People want to know that. So I've tried to distill that down to some very simple notions. We're going to concentrate on very strong financial management. We're going to concentrate on good acquisition. And then finally, we're going to concentrate on our people, our human capital. Really, those are the pillars. Those are the foundation that we're going to build our success upon.
For Boris, it's about having the right tools and providing decision makers with the right information to inform their actions.
Are we doing the right kind of analysis, the right value-added analysis to help decision makers make good decisions? Do we have the tools that inform decision makers? You know, the department is very large. We have a very varied mission. What's the right kind of information we need for decision makers? How are we going to collect that information? How are we going to provide it to decision makers real time so that we can make better, smarter decisions? Now, those tools don't make the decisions for you, but they support decision making. The business of protecting the nation's homeland requires real-time support. So while I am not in the frontline provision of service business providing Homeland Security services, we are providing that backbone support. And I need better tools to be able to do that. What can I do to get better? That's a question I'm always asked. What can I do to get better? We need to make sure that we're providing you the tools you need to be able to work effectively and smart. I want people to get good at the basics, be good at their core school skills, and then we can help them get better.
Shaping the technology leaders of tomorrow is a core mission for the National Defense University's iCollege. Dr. Robert Childs, its chancellor, discusses how the college is positioning itself as a global hub for educating, informing, and connecting information leaders.
And the last time you interviewed me was right before our 20th anniversary. At the time, we talked about some of the things we're doing, and that made us start thinking, in all honesty, and reflecting on what we had done in the past. And we found out that we were doing more than just educating people. We were actually informing people and connecting people. And we made our name with the Chief Information Officer programs. And all of a sudden, it had expanded into process improvement, enterprise architecture, emerging technologies, all of these areas. So we took a look at what we did, and we're actually becoming a global hub for educating, informing, and connecting information age leaders. It was no longer just CIOs, it was leaders. That was a huge step forward. We haven't actually changed much organizationally in numbers. We have about 85 people, 50 faculty members, 35 staff members. We're organized into departments, and the departments are organized around programs, information strategies, information assurance, Chief Financial Officer Academy. We also have IT project management, and that area is actually becoming a hot topic these days also.
Childs explains what's in a name and his institution's evolution to what is now the iCollege.
The name change came about. The president of the university, Admiral Rondo, thought that that was an appropriate name change because of the magnitude and the impact that the position has and the impact that the college is having both in the United States and internationally. And that came along with the degree granting effort that we just completed for the Master of Science in Government Information Leadership program. We went through a very extensive 3-year study, a self-study, where we had to take a look at our internal processes and go through everything that any college or university would go through for accreditation. The Department of Education had 3 team members come in, plus they had a 3-team member of the NASIKI, which is a group of individuals that are selected by both the Department of Education and the House and the Senate. They made their recommendation to the overall 18-member committee. Admiral Rondo and I had to testify before that committee in early December. We received a unanimous 18-0 vote to grant the Master of Science degree.
According to Childs, it's all about how leaders position their organization.
I think the leader has to recognize excellence and create the environment where people can perform well and excel in the things that they're good at. I think the leader has to understand the trends and connect the dots. And I think the leader has to seal deals. The leader has to make decisions. And you try to position your organization into a place that you can take advantages of the trends and the talents that you have.
Today, local and state governments are under tremendous pressure to do more with less. As we continue to engage government executives outside the Beltway, I had the pleasure of speaking with Stephen Goldsmith, Deputy Mayor for Operations for the City of New York, about how city government is modernizing and consolidating operations for the 21st century, and what New York is doing to shape a government that is customer-focused, innovative, and more efficient.
Well, it's often easier to do creative things when you have a lot of money. Now, when you don't have much money, there's an imperative for change, but it takes some capital investment to produce really transformative change. It doesn't take any capital investment to produce incremental change. The larger issues are ones that really are based on the fact we've got a $63-65 billion, depending on what year you're talking about, dollar budget. The problem is that budget doesn't really cover, the revenues don't cover the costs. And the mayor has managed to reduce operating expenses a few times. But the problem is aggravated by, as it is everywhere in the country, but particularly here, these huge overhanging retiree costs, pension and health care. And every year, more and more money goes out of the current operating budget to fill the hole in financing the pensions. And so, when the mayor first started, this number was about $1.2 billion a year. Next year, it'll be $8 billion, and then it goes up from there. So just to kind of pause and think about the scale of this, that's $8 billion in police officers and teachers and sanitation workers and social services and the like that we can't not afford because they have to pay for services that were previously given to the city of New York by its workforce. Right now, we owe an obligation to pay that bargain, but that doesn't make it affordable. And there's a really serious crunch, and today's budget is out of balance by a couple billion dollars.
The fiscal crunch presents a whole host of other challenges that require government leaders to be more innovative. Deputy Mayor Goldsmith continues.
It depends whether one's talking about kind of short-term or long-term. I mean, one really big challenge, I think, is to rework the labor management bargain in New York. I think the problem is how the current civil service system developed in 100 years since Tammany Hall intersects with collective bargaining. It manages the workers as if they're a problem, not as if they're an asset. Biggest challenge I think that I have is to try to provide the technology tools and the changes in the relationships that unlock the value of labor. And that means giving labor confidence that those changes are in their best interest. Then the challenge is how one gets innovation sanely through that maze.
For Goldsmith, innovation is only possible if we have fewer rules and more results.
Government today is a victim of its own successes, right? So we're in New York City, so we should pay homage to Tammany Hall, right? You know, corruption and cronyism and kickbacks and hiring your cousins and giving contracts to your friends. So I say, well, we can't do that. That's bad. That's really bad. So let's make it difficult to be bad. So how do you make it difficult to be bad? Well, you set up a rule or two about how you should procure, right? You set up a couple of rules about how you should hire. Then you go, well, that makes sense. So if 2 rules are good, 100 rules are better. Well, 100 rules are good, then 1,000 rules are better, right? And then so 100 years later, literally 100 years later, you're in a forest of rules. And the way you have made government more honest and the way you have stopped the abuse of discretion is by stopping the use of discretion. So if you don't have any discretion to use, you can't often abuse it, but nor can you actually solve a problem. This is what gives credence to red tape, right? You have a problem, I don't care. I have a rule, right? And so I can solve your problem, but that would cause me to violate my rules, right? So the question then becomes, can you change the way we operate to inject more discretion in the system and still hold people accountable? And I think with the analytic tools we've discussed earlier in the interview, you can do that, right? You can look at the outliers. You can look at the way they analyze and make folks analyze and make decisions. You can give supervisors real-time data. And therefore, the post-progressive era will be an era that will be more discretion, more problem-solving, fewer rules, but an accountability system that's driven by analytics and the ability to study the way people make their decisions.
Next up are Profiles in Leadership, when the special edition of the Business of Government magazine returns.